run toward the setting sun, 1,000 miles to Nome. Through wind and snow and overflow, men and dogs race on against trail and time and Arctic climb. It's not for the weak and frail.
Rick Swenson once said that the weakest part of an Iditarod team is the musher and not the sled dog. Well, why is it that an animal that weighs roughly 50 pounds can make it over 1,000 miles to Nome? Well, first and foremost, every member of the Iditarod team is a superbly trained athlete. Veterinarian pathologist Dr. R.W. Van Pelt sees hundreds of Iditarod dogs in his practice in Fairbanks.
Not many of us can go 50 or 100 miles day after day, or for that matter, sprint 20 to 25 or 30 miles and maintain the performance over a 2 or 3 day race as the dog is. But he is a superb athlete, probably the best animal athlete we deal with at the time. Probably next would be the racehorse. The greyhound is certainly up there, but he's in a sprint category, much like a racing quarter horse or a thoroughbred. But the mushing dog is a distance animal and is absolutely superb athlete. And the dogs we come in that have earned training are absolutely in superb condition and health. They have to be to perform.
Just what is an Iditarod dog? Joe Reddington, Sr., father of the Iditarod, talks about what a musher wants in his sled dogs.
I've got certain dogs in my team that's never had a booty on them. The feet are just perfect feet, and that's what we're looking for, and I think all the mushers are, and I know Rick has, and myself, we have bred towards those traits that are what we're looking for, Iditarod dogs. Now, back in the freighting days, when I was freighting, it didn't make any difference. If I had a dog at a sore foot, I put a booty on him, and I went ahead and took some freight or whatever I wanted to over there, and it didn't make any difference whether I was 2 hours late or if I didn't get it there till the next day, you know. But now, it's a different situation. You've got a schedule, more or less, you've got to make. And you can't be booting dogs and worrying about bad feet. And you got to have dogs that'll drink water, and you got to have dogs that'll eat. And there's a lot of dogs, you know, especially a lot of Siberians that I've owned throughout the last 30 years that are very picky about eating. They only nibble a little bit. Well, those dogs are out. They're not Iditarod dogs.
Susan Butcher, the first woman to place in the top five, says she's constantly breeding for the best Iditarod team.
My original team was my trapping team from down the Wrangells, and I still have quite a few of them in there. And in fact, the best dogs that we have coming up are bred out of some of my dogs, bred into the Reddington dogs. The Reddington dog is a fantastic body and has got some good speed, but it doesn't always have a good head. And so we're trying to breed some of the good head out of my dogs into some good body from his.
The Iditarod sled dog race was first held in 1973. And since that time, the breeding of the sled dog has come a long way. Dr. Van Pelt talks about some of the characteristics that have been bred into the Iditarod dog.
Basically, they try to breed for the dog who will maintain the desired performance. And they've introduced other lines of dogs. For instance, the Irish Setter has been introduced for its speed and stamina. The hound dogs have been introduced into the lines for stamina, the hound having a lot of stamina. They may be a little bit slow. They've tried other pet dogs. I've seen Airedale introduced into them. We've seen various hunting breeds, particularly the Labrador Retriever introduced. And I understand among some of the coastal dogs where at one time they had reindeer herds, the Australian Shepherd was introduced to herd reindeer and ended up intermingling with the coastal sled dogs, which gives them their odd tricolor that they have now and then, or the black and white dogs we see, or what we call a blue merle type of dog, much like the domestic collie.
Many of the top sled dogs that run in the Iditarod are descendants of the old village dogs that carried the mail. From Ruby to Galena to Hooslea and on out to the coast, the one rule that held true was survival of the fittest. And so it is that many of the Iditarod sled dogs come from some of the best and toughest breedings in all the world.
Through wind and snow and overflow, men and dogs race on. Against trail and time and Arctic climb, it's not for the weak and frail. Through the wilderness to find the best on the Iditarod trail.
In Fairbanks, Sue Corte reporting.
Through the wilderness to find the best on the Iditarod trail.
Iditarod Sled Dog Race is a race against the clock. Who can get between Anchorage and Nome in the fastest amount of time? A major factor in winning the Iditarod is in the care and feeding of the dogs. It is of the utmost importance, and a musher has to be an expert at maintaining his team in order to make that dash to Nome and come out on top. The diet of an Iditarod dog can read like a menu from any fine restaurant.
Mutton, ground beef, chicken, liver. Those are the main ingredients right there. Lots of meat.
Mainly around fish. I had lamb chops as well.
Some hamburger and pork and stuff like that.
Most Iditarod sled dogs eat far better than the average person. Strict attention is paid to caloric intake, vitamins, electrolyte levels, fat protein percentages, and fluid intake and output. Variety is the spice of life, and on the Iditarod, it's also an important element of the sled dog's diet. Tired dogs won't eat just anything, and sometimes many different types of foods are tried to coax the dogs into eating. And the sled dog's diet needs to be adjusted according to the weather. Four-time Iditarod champion Rick Swenson.
You've got to have enough different kinds of dog food to adjust to the weather conditions.
That's interesting.
And if it's warm weather, you want to have fish or something that's very lean, and if it's cold, you want to have something very fatty. Mm-hmm. When we would feed beaver at the end of the race, they'd just throw it up. It was too greasy.
Each musher has his own recipe for trail food and snacks. Joe Riddington Sr. talks about his famous honey balls.
We make up what we call a honey ball. It's a very rich food that we find the dogs like very good. And a lot of times when they won't eat anything else, they'll eat honey balls. And I don't think I ever had mine refuse them this year, have you, Susan? And it's so rich that that it does them some good if they only eat a half a pound of it. They're getting a lot of calories and a lot of good. And that is made up of, we make up so that we have about 400 or 500 pounds of that for on the trail. And it's made up of lean meat that we get out of Colorado. We don't want any beef tallow in it. And it's got about 4% tallow is what we get. And then we add 60 pounds of Montana honey to that 250 pounds of meat. And 10 pounds of vitamins, 10 pounds of brewer's yeast, and usually 5 gallons of some type of oil, such as safflower oil, and 2 gallons of wheat germ oil, 5 pounds of salt, and 3 number 10 cans of powdered eggs, and that's all mixed together. Mm. And did I leave out anything? That's about it. And every year we use that, and we find that that we snack the dogs on this.
The Iditarod race has come a long way since the early days, and today's top contenders have to be on top of the feed situation because, as Rick Swenson put it, a musher can't afford to make any mistakes if he expects to win.
It's definitely getting more sophisticated. I mean, you have to be more on top of the feed situation and the equipment situation. There's getting to be so many good teams that you just can't make the mistakes you used to be able to make. The teams that used to be in the back aren't so far back there anymore.
In our next report, we'll take a look at the attitude of an Iditarod dog. In Fairbanks, Sue Corte reporting. It could be the competition, or the challenge of reaching a goal, or simply a desire to see Alaska, but all Iditarod mushers are in the race because they want to be. This is also true for the Iditarod sled dog. Joe Reddington Sr., father of the Iditarod, says sled dogs, by their nature, are born to run.
Well, a lot of people don't understand that the husky is a dog that loves to run, just like a rabbit dog likes to hunt rabbits and a setter likes to scent birds. I mean, you wouldn't try to make a bird dog out of a greyhound. I mean, that dog just ain't for that purpose. But if you wanted something that could catch a jackrabbit, you'd look for a greyhound. Well, you want something that'll work and something that's made for that purpose and bred for that purpose, then you want a husky. And that's just about the way it is. The husky loves to work, he loves to go, and he wants to see what's over the next hill, and he's bred for that purpose.
That desire of a sled dog to want to run is called attitude. An attitude is a crucial factor in the Iditarod. It can mean the difference between finishing first and not finishing at all. Susan Butcher of Kinnick talks about developing a good attitude in her dogs.
Well, a lot is how the dog is trained, but it's also, you can breed for a happier dog, you know, I mean, or at least pick them out of the litter for a happy dog. At least that's what I'd like to have. I want to have a dog that's pretty happy along the trail instead of sitting there looking miserable in a storm. I like a dog that's up there wagging its tail, whether the wind's blowing 50 miles an hour or what.
The desire to want to run is a common denominator in all sled dogs, but each dog is an individual with its own personality, and more often than not, there's one dog that becomes the musher's favorite. Iditarod veteran and two-time Cusco 300 champion Jerry Austin describes his dog, Leo.
He's the last of the Call of the Wild type dogs, the like buck in Call of the Wild. I mean, he's a real macho dog. Dick Mackey told me one time that he was having a lot of leader problems. This was years ago, and he told me that he'll never go in Iditarod again unless he's got a leader that'll swim halfway across a lake and then jump through a ring of fire and swim the rest of the way across a lake. And I have only a few dogs that'll do that, but that Leo's certainly one of them.
The dog's attitude is what makes them run day after day, and for some dogs, it's become year after year. Rick Swenson says a musher has a definite advantage if some of his dogs have already made the trip to Nome.
It's awful nice to have veterans, I'll tell you that. It doesn't show up so much until the end when you start to pull away from the rest of the teams and you're out in the lead a lot and you're pushing your dogs. The veterans know, hey, it's only 100 miles, you know. I mean, it's nice to work new dogs in, but as long as I can, I'm going to be putting those new dogs in a team that's not competing.
In our next report, we'll take a look at the training of an Iditarod dog. In Fairbanks, Sue Corte reporting. As the autumn leaves start to fall and as the frost finds the blueberries, serious Iditarod mushers are already out on the trail. Some mushers use carts with wheels, while others use ordinary sleds on bare ground. But the goal is always the same, to toughen up the dogs and sort out just who will be going to Nome. And so begins the process of training an Iditarod team. For the musher, it is a time for cold hands, for long days on the trail and endless hours of toil. But for the sled dog, it is a time for excitement, to find out what's around the next bend, to explore new trails, and to chase ptarmigan or moose. Winter is indeed a welcome sight for the husky, a break from the six-foot circle of summer. 1980 Iditarod champion Joe May talks about how he trained for the race that year.
It was a good year for me because our early training was done in poor fall conditions, but we had a real late fall, and I trained in warm weather and on a lot of bare ground, and inadvertently I trained a team for almost the identical conditions that we had for the first 500 miles of this race, and for those dogs it was nothing new. A lot of the guys who had better training conditions, better snow and better temperatures, were not as fortunate as I was in that respect for the first part of the race.
Each musher has his own philosophy for training dogs. Some like to put short miles on the dogs early in the season and build the team up gradually. But others take a different approach, like St. Michael musher Jerry Austin, who talks about training for the 1982 Iditarod.
I started out running dogs about 3-4 days a week, and I tried real early in the season to get down to long runs. So for several months, I haven't been making any runs that were under about 45 miles. And they were all with Rose. Clara ran a 5-dog team all winter. And Mike Ross ran a 7-dog team, and I ran an 8-dog team. And all the dogs went exactly the same miles the whole time.
Unlike sprint mushers, Iditarod drivers train their dogs to pace themselves. If a dog is going to travel the distance to Nome, he certainly won't be able to lope the entire way. 1975 Iditarod champion Emmett Peters talks about training his dogs to pace themselves.
I make them pull real hard, you know. Every dog in the team knows what they have to do. What pull is, you know. Before, they used to run in a dead gallop, and then when they're kind of tired themselves out and don't know how to pace themselves, you know. So now, They can gallop for maybe 20, 25 miles and then go right down to a good trot, and that's what I and gunning force. So this year I trained him by pulling a snow machine.
Tomorrow, in our final report, we'll take a look at the history and some of the legends of the Iditarod. In Fairbanks, Sue Corte reporting.
On the Yukon down through the Indian towns and across the Unalakleet, where the wind blows tough and the trail is rough over the frozen sea. And on a sleepless night you might catch sight of Sepulpac in the mail, moving all alone wearing number one on the Iditarod Trail.
The roots of the Iditarod are embedded in the days of long ago, when Leonard Sepulpa, Scotty Allen, and Iron Man Johnson still blazed the trails of Alaska, and when sled dogs like Baldy of Nome, Togo, Doobie, and Balto were the envy of any musher. True to its roots, the Iditarod is where legends are born, and the legends of today will be on the trail again for the last great race on Earth. Cowboy Larry Smith will be there, along with Herbie Nyakpuk, the Shishmaref Cannonball, and Emmett Peters, the Yukon Fox, and of course, Mr. Iditarod himself, Rick Swenson. These names will go down in the annals of Alaska's history, right along with Sepulpa, Wild Bill Shannon, and Scotty Allen. And the musher's dogs will also be immortalized. Names like Piper are sure to be there, Piper, who led Ken Chase to Nome 8 times, and Nugget, who made winners out of both Carl Huntington and Emmett Peters. And remember Andy, who led Rick Swenson to several Iditarod victories. As Swenson said it, the dogs are certainly a lot tougher than the mushers.
To me, the weakest point of the team, I've thought this for a couple of years, isn't the dogs. It's the driver. He's the weak point in the team. So I think the dogs right now are capable of doing a lot more than we're letting them do, partly because we're holding them back and partly because we can't keep up.
Veterinarian pathologist Dr. R.W. Van Pelt agrees. Iditarod dogs are indeed superior athletes.
The heart on the sled dog is about a third larger than that of the average pet dog. The same holds true for the racing thoroughbred. His heart is also about a third larger than the average horse. And I feel that with the racing dog or the dogs on the northern tier here, that they have a fundamental ability to store fat internally, even though they may appear thin outwardly. And I feel that this is probably an adaptation over the years to the cold northern climates. In other words, he does have a reservoir of energy or fat, which is internal.
Men and dogs race on against trail and time, and Arctic climb is not for the weak and frail.
Most of the top contenders in the Iditarod will tell you that when it comes to winning the big race, it's all up to the dogs. Ultimately, they are the ones that will, inch by inch and foot by foot, travel each one of the 1,000 miles to Nome. Four-time Iditarod champion Rick Swenson.
Once we get out on the trail, then it's a whole different deal. The pressure's gone, then it's up to the dogs.
Follow the path, the wind and the draft down the South Fork, gust of wind. And on a starry night, the welcome lights of Grayling bring you in.
In Fairbanks, Sue Corte reporting.
Dog teams run toward the setting sun, 1,000 miles to Nome. Through wind and snow and over below, men and dogs race on. Against trail and time and Arctic climb, it's not for the weak and frail. To find the best.